This is cinematic kryptonite. I'm going to use it to make a propaganda film so powerful, it destroys coal seam gas forever.
That's Anna Bronowski, an Aussie filmmaker who went to North Korea to study Kim Jong-il's propaganda filmmaking techniques. Why? Because she was determined to stop a new coal seam gas mine near her Sydney home. Anna found herself in North Korea meeting with their most famous filmmakers, and as she told Catherine Zengerer, she learned the secrets of making the perfect propaganda film and how the concept of people power could join the most isolated society in the world in the fight against a common enemy.
It's a pretty strange thing to combine the words Kim Jong-il and coal seam gas in the same movie, let alone the same sentence. But what happened was a very close friend of mine went to North Korea and she came back and gave me this birthday present, and it was Kim Jong-il's manifesto on how to make the perfect propaganda movie. And until then, I just thought of him as big-haired dictator from Team America who liked to threaten to nuke America. And I had no idea that he was also a film buff and knew a lot about film to the point where he actually co-opted Hollywood techniques and plots.
He has a whole archive of Hollywood movies that he's studied.
Yeah, 20,000 Western movies. He loved Western movies. He studied them and he used them to revolutionise the way North Koreans made propaganda films.
It's fascinating when you get in there how much they obviously prioritise this industry, how incredibly funded it is. You must have been a bit jealous as an Australian filmmaker struggling in the industry here.
Knock the fact that you have no script control out of the equation. Pyongyang wouldn't be a bad place to be a movie maker, I've got to say. Yes, the regime, as most totalitarian states do, value their artists very highly because filmmakers in particular are closely involved in propagating whatever myth the regime wants to put out there. The filmmakers I hang out with in Aim High and Creation are the privileged. They're living a relatively good life in Pyongyang. They didn't know what rents and mortgages were. The minute they come out of Pyongyang Film University, they're given an apartment, put on a retainer, and allowed to work for the rest of their lives. And if they're between films, they're sent off overseas to Eastern European countries to study techniques.
Yeah. And in meeting them, it was just remarkable how insightful they were into exactly what you were trying to portray in your story of a woman fighting against these multinational companies who are trying to propagate fracking and coal seam gas.
Yeah, I mean, they're innocent in the sense that they've been locked away from what the outside world thinks of North Korea through the fact that they have no internet. But they're very intelligent people. They were quite bewildered that a government would allow coal seam gas to happen, which I thought was a pretty interesting thing because, of course, if Kim Jong-un suddenly decided coal seam gas was the next great industry in North Korea, everyone would be behind it, and if you weren't, you'd be punished. They took on my cause, and I went over there, and I had to educate them about coal seam gas. So they kind of bonded with my farmers that I showed them and really wanted me to make a film that would somehow, you know, alert the poor farmers in my country to this problem.
The concept is that people power can defeat the enemy, and that concept was a similar concept that the North Koreans hold against America, and the same idea that you were trying to bring into your fight of the ordinary person against coal seam gas giants. You ended up making the propaganda film and incorporating that into this film Aim High and Creation. Was it always your intention to do that, or did you just want to set out to make a propaganda film and that journey ended up becoming the movie?
It was always my intention that it would be a documentary with a film within a film. And the message of that short film is the same as the message of many North Korean feature movies, which is the people united will never be defeated. That is actually one of the key platforms of traditional socialism. And I think that more and more we're seeing that in action around the world with Occupy Wall Street, with the farmers coming out who've never protested in their lives and vote conservative. As vulture capitalism takes hold and money is condensed in the hands of the 1%, people power, I think, is becoming relevant again. It's almost the only thing we've got left, you know.
So do those filmmakers that you met get to see the film in its entirety?
No, and we always knew they wouldn't. I made it very clear to our North Korean minders that I was going to set up the cliched images of Kim Jong-il in the West in the first 5 minutes of the film, the documentary. And they said, well, okay, thank you for being honest, but, you know, we doubt that means you'll be able to show this documentary in our country, because in North Korea he's seen as a god, literally. So what the North Korean filmmakers did see was the director's cut of our propaganda movie, The Gardener. So in Aim Home Creation, the film within a film, The Gardener, is 13 minutes long, but I showed the North Koreans the 16-minute version, and they did see that, and they liked it, and they thought I'd done an okay job following their techniques.
Anna Bronofsky, director of Aim High in Creation, speaking with Catherine Zengara. The Adelaide season of Aim High in Creation opens this weekend and is then touring to other states.